It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Here in the South, a good portion of what we eat falls into the category of soul food, or at least inspired by soul food. Dishes like fried okra, pickled pig feet, black-eyed peas, those are all staples for many Southerners, particularly African Americans. As much as soul food is known to bring people together at the table, though, it can also wreak a pretty tough penance on families. That was filmmaker Byron Hurt's experience. He's originally from Milledgeville, Georgia, and he's behind the documentary Soul Food Junkies, which is now streaming on Netflix. Hey, Byron.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Before we get into this discussion about soul food and the addiction to it, what does it mean to have your documentary now streaming on Netflix?
Oh, well, that's a really big deal for me. You know, you're not really a filmmaker nowadays unless your film is on Netflix. So it's an important way to get the film out there and to have people have access to it. It's now a major distribution platform that everybody associates in terms of the name recognition, so it's very important.
So let's bring into this conversation two experts in food. Shade Anderson is the African Heritage and Health Program Coordinator with the nutrition nonprofit group Old Ways. Good morning, Shade.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And we had to bring in a dietitian to tell us exactly how bad fried chicken is. Connie Crawley will do that for us. She lives in Athens, where she worked for the University of Georgia Extension for a number of years. Hi, Connie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. First, Byron, do you still connect to your father's death with eating soul food?
No, I do not. Not solely soul food. I think my father's illness was probably determined by a number of different factors. Some of them are unknown, and some of them probably could be linked to diet and lifestyle. But I think that's the point of the larger film. Like the larger story of the film is my journey to better understand our connection to soul food, our emotional connection, our historical connection to Southern food, which then became known as soul food. And also not just personal eating habits, but some of the structural, systemic issues that affect people of color and poor people in terms of access to healthy quality food.
But either Shade or Connie, I bet you can answer this question. And let me go to you first, Connie. One of the things Byron suggests in the film is that there's the possibility of addiction to a certain kind of food. And it seems that recent studies have supported that in some way. I mean, some studies have confirmed that high fat, high calorie foods affect the brain in the same way that cocaine and heroin does, right?
Well, certainly we do acquire taste for certain flavors, and those flavors, unfortunately, in soul food are related to fat content and salt content and sugar content, and all of those three things have been connected with almost all the chronic diseases that we see in this country. So it is an acquired taste. It can be adjusted, but people have to make a commitment to make that adjustment.
And yet it's really difficult, Shade, to change people's habits, because some of it is cultural and some of it has to do with family. In the documentary, Byron spoke with Morehouse College professor Mark Lamont Hill, and he talked about his experience growing up with soul food. He says he's tried to live a healthier lifestyle, but he says it is not easy.
I keep hot sauce in my bag, just in case some fried chicken pops off. I love it. You know what I mean? That's how I live. But I have to make a choice and say, okay, today I have to make a different choice because yesterday I made a bad choice. And I try to regulate myself. But it's a work in progress. It's like somebody who's trying to get off of like crack or heroin or something. I'm trying to wean myself off fried chicken, man.
Soul food restaurants don't.
Shade, I mean, that sounds funny, but how much truth is there to that?
Absolutely. We see our participants in our A Taste of African Heritage cooking series that they, too, are coming with this experience, the challenges in wanting to change your palate. But our cooking series has seen great improvements in people's healthy behaviors, but also biomarkers. Through the six lessons, people are being exposed to an abundance of vegetables, whole grains, legumes, herbs, and spices that they may or may not be familiar with, and using healthy oils and healthy food preparations to make the foods that they already enjoy, but just making them healthier. And so post the six lessons, we see that people are eating more of those things regularly, cooking more, eating fresh more, and it has greatly improved their blood pressure, their weight, their waist circumference.
Yeah. Let me take this to Byron, because Byron, I found it interesting the reasons why many people that gave you for why they like soul food so much. Let's listen to a minister, Abdul Hafiz Muhammad. He's with the Nation of Islam, and the Nation of Islam actually has programs. They have messages designed around trying to get people to eat healthier. So this was pretty funny.
Soul food restaurants don't turn me on. What turns me on today is a nice salad, you know, with different kinds of lettuce and roughage that will clean out your colon. The different kinds of the onions and the beets and the carrots and things of that nature that make things healthy. I like healthy living today.
No fried chicken?
Well,
no fried chicken.
Hard giving up that fried chicken.
Byron, tell me about what did people tell you? Why is it so hard to give that stuff up?
Well, I think there's a real strong emotional connection to the food that they grew up with in their homes, cooked by their grandmothers, their grandfathers, and aunts and uncles during holidays and family get-togethers, family reunions, and that sort of thing. So I think a lot of people who grew up with the soul food tradition do not want to give it up. And then there's also the taste. I mean, soul food cooked in a certain way, and some of the more unhealthier ways, is tasty. I mean, it's hard to beat the taste of soul food, and that's one of the reasons why people love it so much. But, you know, as the film suggests, you can continue to maintain the soul food tradition by preparing the food differently with healthier oils, as it was mentioned, and, you know, not cooked with certain fatty foods whatever the food that you're cooking, and still enjoy some of those Southern traditions that we are accustomed to.
So then let me take that to you, Connie. Does soul food get a bad rap? I mean, you can cook greens with bacon grease, but you don't have to, right?
Well, yes. The best thing about soul food is the fact that it does usually use a lot of vegetables, and that is something that is a positive. It's just how the vegetables are prepared. The real issue I see with soul food is that it contains a lot of meat, and unfortunately a lot of that meat is a high-fat meat that was less expensive, so people use that. So the real issue is, can you cut back on the meat, or can you switch to a leaner meat? And then can you cut back on the amount of seasoning by using alternative seasonings, such as herbs and spices that aren't high in sodium, or lemon or wine or some other seasoning that would be a lot more healthy for the person. But many people really have lost the skills of cooking anymore. You know, my clients that I see that are African American, they're not making soul food because soul food takes a long time to cook. They're having it at holidays mainly, but they're usually eating out a lot or eating a lot of convenience foods. And those are not necessarily soul food restaurants that they're going to, but they're getting what would be high fat, high sugar, high salt foods in either fast food places or family restaurant type places that sometimes have what would be considered soul foods that are now on the menu that are not necessarily soul food restaurants.
And this is something, actually, we got a tweet from a listener. The Davil says, I'm eager to hear the soul food segment, but I just want to say, soul vegetarian, 2 in Atlanta, 1 in Tally, great food and good for you. And this is also something that you talked about in the documentary as well, Byron. We hear from chef and food activist Bryant Terry, who talked about this very thing.
The most important thing is that people complicate their understanding of what soul food is, because it's easy to say that it's the bane of African-American health. The bigger cause of the decline of African-American health is the industrialization of our food system 4 or 5 decades ago. The goal of these corporations that are producing food is to make it cheap, to make it fast, to make it convenient.
So, Sade, we're talking about an issue perhaps that is not just about soul food and eating grits with a lot of cheese, but just about the fact that, like Connie says, people aren't cooking for themselves anymore?
Right. I agree. We definitely live in a fast food world. And so Old Ways, a Taste of African Heritage program, is trying to get people back into the kitchen and create a new relationship with food. As everyone mentioned, the healthier oils, the spices, the herbs, using those instead of the excessive amounts of salt and sugar to flavor your foods. Know that you don't have to put, as you said, cheese or meat in all of the vegetables. Our program is completely plant-based for the 6 lessons intentionally because we know that people of African descent are eating excessive amounts of meat and dairy, and we know that that's causing the high rates of high-related, food-related food illnesses. And so diabetes, high blood pressure, et cetera.
Yeah.
So we intentionally made it plant-based to know that you can prepare collard greens delicious without the ham hocks. You can make okra without frying it. You can make stewed black-eyed peas, sweet potatoes, just by baking them. You don't have to add anything.
So this brings us, Byron, back to you, and especially back to some of the reasons your dad had trouble giving up soul food. And that was because he didn't really want to embrace change. He wanted the food made exactly the way his family had made it for generations. And I wanted to play this clip from the documentary with Chantel Lewis, who's a curator of African diasporan history and culture, explaining how far back the roots go that connect people to this food.
New Orleans is a very African city with, I would say, a thin French veil. The first wave of African people were coming from the Senegambia region of West Africa to New Orleans. Something else that these people brought was okra, which gumbo is actually the West African word for okra. And so the women, when they were disembarking off of the slave ships, people were finding seeds in their hair, and they were actually okra seeds.
Byron, help me understand why people felt such a strong pride in this type of food.
Well, back during slavery, where enslaved Africans or Africans who were enslaved and then brought over to the Americas lost a lot of personal control and institutional control, and food was one way that we could regain control over our lives and sort of invent a culinary style or tradition that we could lay claim to and be very proud of. And I think that's one reason why, we hold on to it so strongly. I do want to clarify something I said earlier about my father. I do think that my father was addicted to food. He loved food, and I think that he did not eat food in moderation and did not have a balanced diet. I can't say for sure, 100%, that it led to his pancreatic cancer. But I think the larger point is getting back to this connection that people have to food and food being cooked and prepared in a particular way that is not for us. And I think, as the guests have suggested and stated, that what we believe is the best approach is to change our palates by cooking and preparing food differently, so that we can benefit from some of the natural tastes and the natural flavors and the natural nutrition that these foods provide. I cook at home every single day, and I cook things like kale, collard greens, beans and legumes, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, baked fish, and salads, and I believe that all of these things fall very neatly into the tradition of soul food, but the preparation is different, and I experience the health benefits that come along with eating these foods in a very healthy way.
So let's actually listen to your dad's voice. This is he passed away, but there's a clip of him in some archival footage that you include in the film.
Under the system of Jim Crow and segregation, probably many people before me had to learn some coping skills. And doing this, they did not necessarily have to surrender their dignity, but they had to find ways, viable ways, tenable ways of getting their needs met without sacrificing our dignity.
So, Connie, before we go away from this segment saying that soul food is basically the dietitian's devil, can you help us understand whether or not soul food is deserving of the blame that it gets? And we've talked a lot about how to get those flavors without all of the fat. Is that a difficult case to make to people who've had, say, collard greens prepared with bacon fat for all their lives?
Well, they have to experiment with it, and they have to experience it. And that's why cooking schools and various demonstrations that can be done for people can convince them that it may taste different, but it doesn't taste bad. And, you know, what we find is that the average person eats about the same 18 to 20 recipes over and over again, or 18 to 20 foods over and over again. And if you can get them to change one of those foods each month, in a year they are a totally different person. But it is hard to make them see the value of doing that. And it especially is hard when the person hasn't yet had the really serious consequences of their lifestyle habits. So, you know, it is hard. Food and exercise are the two hardest things to change in anyone, I think. And so it takes someone who really has a commitment to make mm-hmm. those changes. And I always say it's a process. It's not something that you throw at them at one time and hope that they'll do it. It has to be something that you work continually together with and make those changes slowly over time. And it may be no more than cutting the salt by 1/4 teaspoon the first time and seeing if it really makes a difference, and then slowly cutting back to where it may be no salt added. But you have to start somewhere, and it takes infinite patience to help people to make the difference. The main thing I see, though, is working with the young people. If you're having your children eat the way that you did or your grandparents did, the problems that you are having will visit them. The genetics is there. Yeah. And so you have to make that decision that you are going to protect your family and that they're worth the effort.
That's Connie Crawley, a dietitian based in Athens. Strade Anderson is the African Heritage and Health Program Coordinator with the nutrition nonprofit group Old Ways. And also filmmaker Byron Hurt, his documentary Soul Food Junkies is now streaming on Netflix. Thanks so much to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.